Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Casino City Gang, your podcast for all things gambling. It's July 16th, 2001, and it's a bright sunny day here in the Boston area as the sun always shines on the Stanley Cup. I am your host, Aaron Todd, broadcasting from Casino City's worldwide headquarters just outside of Boston. And joining me, as always, are Dan Igo and Vin Narayanan. Gentlemen, how's it feel to be living in the most successful sports city in the United States?
That feels pretty good for me. I don't know about Vin. Vin's not a local like myself, but I think it's always good to be around in a town with successful sports teams.
It feels much better having won the Conn Smythe bet from last night.
Yeah, we had a little prop bet, and Vin unfortunately took me down. He offered me 42-1 odds on the field versus Tim Thomas and the Conn Smythe before the game, and I actually didn't even really like the odds, to be honest. But I figured I'd throw a dollar up and try to win 42, and alas, I had to hand over my dollar. I think I actually gave it to you with about 7 or 8 minutes left in the game.
I got another taker last night, too, which was good, too.
It was going to be pretty hard for him to lose that, especially with Boston winning. There was no way he wasn't. And him posting, what, his second or third shutout of the series?
Second, I think.
Yes. So it was a great series. If you're a hockey fan, even if you're not a hockey fan, if you happen to catch some games, I think it could make you a hockey fan.
Yeah, anytime you give up 8 goals in 7 games, you're doing all right.
But I just want to thank Vin for not treating the Todd Tavern like the citizens of Vancouver have treated their city in the wake of the loss.
Yeah, the only thing more disgraceful the Vancouver Canucks play in this series was the actions of the citizens of Vancouver last night, where they overturned several cars, they broke into some stores, general looting. It was pretty disgusting.
Well, we're just happy to say that nothing like that happened here in Boston. The celebration seemed to be pretty exuberant, but under control.
Yeah, that's because outside of the Todd Tavern, they stopped serving alcohol around 10 o'clock.
Well, we enjoyed it, and we hope you did too. And we've got plenty to talk about today. Outside of hockey, Vin, I think, is a little disappointed that he's not going to be able to make any hockey bets in our best bets anymore. But a few more months, and I'm sure he'll be our hockey guru once again when it comes to the best bets. But action, like I said, action-packed show today, starting with a World Series of Poker update. It's been an amazing series so far. 23 bracelets have been awarded, and we've seen a lot of first-time bracelet winners. Dan, as the runaway leader in our World Series of Poker fantasy contest, I think you're the most qualified person to talk about the series. Can you give us an update on the major storylines that we've seen so far?
Yeah, like you said, I think the biggest storyline right now that surprised me, we talked about last week, is the increased participation so far in the World Series. It doesn't look like anything's really slowing down in terms of entrance. I think we've had a few events that have been smaller than last year's, but not a significant drop. And a lot of big name pros are winning bracelets. Like you said, I'm kind of running away with this WSOP Fantasy League. Having 3 bracelet winners in the first couple of weeks certainly helps. The biggest name who won their first bracelet has to be Bertrand Grospellier, Elky, as he is known as. He won the $10,000 7-card stud championship. He said this was the first stud tournament he's ever played, so maybe he'll add that to his repertoire. The next big name who, the general public might not know a lot about, but poker fans certainly know about, is Jason Somerville. He won the $1,000 No Limit Hold'em event, which has been called the poker lottery because the entrants have been the fields have been so big because of the low buy-in fee. He had finished in previous events. He had finished second, third, fourth, and fifth. So, like a lot of people smarter than me have said, he's completed the wheel in terms of WSOP wins. And then John Juwanda, in the event that probably garnered the most discussion, simply because of all the big names involved, John Juwanda won the Deuce of Seven Draw Low Ball Championship, $10,000 event, and he defeated Phil Hellmuth heads up. Hellmuth was going for his 12th WSOP bracelet. It will have been his first bracelet in a non-Hold'em event. and he had a 2.5-to-1 or 3-to-1 chip advantage going into heads-up play, and then Juwan just kind of broke him down, you know, bit by bit. We had a little fun at Helmuth's expense on Monday. We did a top 10 tweets. Helmuth would have sent had he won the WSOP bracelet. You can find that list in the Casino City Times newsletter. It'll probably be in the online Casino City Times newsletter today as well. And that was pretty pretty fun to come up with. And Helmuth, you know, he's playing in some events this year. I wouldn't be surprised if he finally broke through and won his 12th, maybe in the Hold'em event, but it seems like he's on his game right now.
Yeah, I had a fun time working on that, too, the fake Twitter feed for Phil Helmuth. Looking back on it, I mean, all the tweets in that are from Phil Helmuth. I wish we'd actually put in a couple tweets from a couple other people that would have been part of Phil Helmuth's Twitter feed. I think that would have been a lot of fun. So the next time we do a fake Twitter feed, we'll include fake tweets from other people.
That's a good idea, actually. We're going to have to blatantly rip off Slate's President Obama's Facebook feed.
Fake Facebook feed? Absolutely. I've got no problem with doing that.
it's been a pretty fun series so far. Vin, has anything surprised you that you've seen so far?
Women. They are in placing in high positions. We've had two women finish second. Maria Ho and Kim Nguyen, and we've got Cindy Violette in the hunt right now. Granted, none of us drafted those women in our fantasy draft, which required one woman on each team. But yes, to me, that's the big storyline so far, outside of obviously the participation numbers being up, is the high impact of women on the field right now. I mean, you're seeing them at the final tables, and you're seeing them contend for bracelets. And it's been a long time since we've had a woman win a bracelet, and it would be, this looks like a year it could happen. They're performing really well as a group.
Well, you know, one of the things that World Series of Poker Media Director Nolan Dalla has done in his write-ups this year, which I think is outstanding, he's including statistics like, percentage of the field that's women. It's typically been around 2 to 5%. I think the World Series would love to see that percentage go up while field sizes continue to at least stay the same and probably expand. I don't think they want to see that percentage go up because the number of women is staying the same and the number of men is decreasing. But so that's one thing that he's done. He's also had an average age of the people in the tournament and then an average age of the people who made the final table. So one of the things that I found interesting is that he's noted that generally the average age of the people who play in the tournament is tended to be, 5 to 8 years higher than the average age of the people at the final table. It's kind of proving that poker really is a young person's game right now. But,
old people need not apply.
Well, they need to apply and then leave their money for the young people, apparently. But the other thing that I think is interesting is that he's started to keep track of and note how long it's been since a woman's won an open event. And that's up to over 180 events. The last winner was in 2008. Vanessa Selfs won a bracelet outside of the ladies' event that they run every year. So it'll be interesting to see if it's finally if that streak is snapped this year. I think everyone would like to see it snapped.
Well, especially after you had all these like fake declarations of the year. Of
well,
the
last
woman
year
and all,
was supposed
all
to be the
stuff.
Year of the woman. And
it's just ridiculous. But I mean, it is notable that we've had a couple second place finishes and that we've got Cindy Violette in contention, and you've got a lot of really good women players out there who are showing well.
And I think one of the things that's interesting now is outside of a few of the sponsored pros who had been in the poker world before the real poker boom, like your Jen Harmon's, your Cindy Violette, who is Cindy Violette, and then also
Annie Duke.
Yeah, exactly. So outside of those women, every time like a woman who was attractive, even perhaps marginally attractive, and then played in a poker tournament, they would get so much media attention because there was such a lacking field of women. And now you're starting to see, like, Maria Ho is a great player. Like, she's making a final table. I'll admit I'd never heard of Kim Nguyen, but, she clearly has some skill. She made a final table of a tough event. So it's you're starting to see women who are skilled. Vanessa Selfs, obviously, is the person who has, most proven herself on you know, the poker circuit. But you're starting to see the women who are really skilled and deserve the attention get the attention because they're making accomplishments. Outside, you know, before it was pretty much if there was a woman at the table and she was marginally attractive, then oh, let's see how she does because it's a woman playing in a poker tournament.
Well, you know, and marginally attractive is a euphemism for poker hot.
Absolutely, absolutely. So anything else that we should be watching for in the World Series of Poker this week, Dan, and maybe the events that are going on right now?
There are going to be a couple $10,000 events. The $10,000 Limit Hold'em Championship is supposed to finish up tomorrow. Daniel Negreanu is currently the chip leader.
Yes.
So there you go. Maybe.
Go fantasy poker team.
Yeah, so maybe he, you know, maybe he
close some ground.
Through. He's been very confident on Twitter. He said he's doing something secret, something new that that will get him the championship. We got a $10,000 seven card stud high low split eight or better championship. That should have a very strong field.
If I ever had the bankroll, I would win that.
You would win that. That is a bold statement right there. That's supposed to kick. Yeah, that event's kicking off Saturday. Should be done by Monday. So. You know, that's where, you know, in the poker fantasy world, you win and lose your pools by these $10,000 events because everything's doubled. So, you know, I've won two of them already, I believe. So I think that's
yeah.
The main reason why I've gotten a sizable lead heading into, you know, kind of the middle of World Series of Poker season.
All right, that's enough gloating from me.
yeah, coming from the distant third place right now, by Aaron Todd.
My first round pick, once again, has not entered an event yet, and it doesn't look like he will anytime soon.
Yeah, Phil Ivey, newsflash, is still not playing at the World Series of Poker. The one thing that I'm actually looking forward to today is seeing how Norman Chad is going to do in the $1,500 stud eight or better event. He is currently fourth in chips with 23 players remaining. I'm really excited for him. He's one of the funniest people that covers poker, obviously, and you know he plays in two or three events every year. And he always plays in the 1500.
He could afford another wife if he wins this.
Well, that and actually, you know, what would be interesting if he goes out and wins this. I wonder if he'll play in the 10K event.
I don't know. I doubt it. But unlikely. But I think Norman Chad would have probably said the same joke I just used on him.
he's genuinely very funny. He's now embraced Twitter,
which is a good thing.
It's an absolutely a good thing. I actually talked to him about Twitter last year. And at that time, he was not using Twitter. Someone else was using Twitter, his Twitter name. He was, you know, it was just a Norman Chad. And he wrote a very funny column about it. And he contacted Twitter to say, this person isn't me. And they said, well, unless you have an account, then there's really not much we can do about it. Essentially, it's what they said. And so he's like, all right, I guess I'll have to get an account. So he set up an account. And he's very funny on Twitter. I encourage you to follow him if you are a Twitter user. And his updates from the tournament have been pretty funny. He's had a couple good anecdotes about you know hands he's been involved with Scotty Wynn. One of them, he made a wheel on the river, and Scotty's like, I'll just bet for you. You know, Scotty bet out. I'll just bet out in case you hit a hand. And he said I raise, and Scotty just goes, uh-oh. So. I look forward to seeing how that event shakes out. It should be a lot of fun to watch. But moving on from the World Series of Poker, and
you want to know what would be really fun to watch along those lines is if Lon McCarron's like doing the commentary, like on stuff, or if he's at the final table and it's streaming, and he's at the table making fun of Lon McCarron the entire time he's at the final table, that would be hilarious. I would actually watch the live stream of that.
I have
just
not had a chance to see a live stream yet, but I would.
If Norman Chad is at a final table, I will watch the live stream.
Yeah. I'll definitely try to do that, too. It should be entertaining. Well, you can follow all the major storylines from the World Series of Poker right at CasinoCityTimes.com. And we are going to be out in Las Vegas covering the event as well. I will be going out for the $50,000 Poker Players Championship. So
what, 20 people show up for that? 25 players?
We'll see. It's going to be less than 100, I think. Last year was 112, and I think it'll be less than 100. It might be 60 or 70. We'll see who's got the cash to throw down. And then Vin and Dan will be heading out for the main event. Vin will be out there for the duration, and Dan will be out there in the craziness of the early few days to track down as many stories as we can, and so you can be sure to follow all the events from the World Series of Poker right here at the CasinoCityTimes.com. We'll also be doing some podcasts as well. We might have an extra one or two.
Yeah, we'll have an extra couple podcasts while the main event is going. We'll go to a 2-podcast-a-week schedule during the main event, and you'll get to feel my pain with me.
It is a grind. It is a grind. Well, moving on from the World Series of Poker to online poker, the CEO of Caesars Entertainment, Gary Loveman, which of course runs the World Series of Poker, recently made news when he went on a Las Vegas talk show and stated that he believed that a bill regulating online poker would pass in Congress this year. Vin, is this bold optimism? Is it cheerleading? What do you think's going on with Loveman's statement?
I think it's a combination of both. Bold optimism, combination of cheerleading. Look, Loveman's job is to say this. Is to be a cheerleader, is to be an advocate, and turn up the heat and turn up the pressure. By saying this, he sent a clear message to Harry Reid: get this done. And that's as clear a message as you can send. He also sent it to the other folks within the gambling industry that say, you want to know what? This is a priority for Caesars. We want to make this happen. Let's get this done now. It's also a nod to reality. If it doesn't get done this year, it ain't happening next year, folks, not in an election year. No one's going to touch it with a 10-foot pole in an election year. I mean, let's face it, Congress isn't going to be voting on much of anything next year unless it's absolutely critical, must-pass legislation. And so it's a nod to reality. It's cheerleading. It's advocacy. It's all of the above. I think it's as the British would call it, you know, highly optimistic. I just have a hard time seeing it happen. I know that Representative Joe Barton out of Texas, a major player in the Republican ranks, is working with the PPA and online poker legislation, and they're going to be introducing it. They've gotten the support of Frank and Campbell, and they're going to be trying to push it through the Commerce Committee. And that's all well and good. But the key players in the House are not exactly gung-ho about it, and until a path clears in the House, you still have to hold. I mean, the most likely path to anything passing is Harry Reid attaching something in the Senate. And that's not a given, because right now, the way you attach a bill in the Senate, you have to attach it to must-pass legislation. Well, all the must-pass legislation in the Senate is being negotiated out of the White House and not out of Senator Harry Reid's office. And if you're not in on the negotiations, you can't attach anything to it. And so it's a tough proposition from just a purely procedural standpoint for Harry Reid to attach anything. And, ambitious is what the British would call it. That's the word I was looking for earlier. It's high on ambition, low on probability of happening. But I applaud Gary Loveman for pushing the issue. And we'll see what happens.
Well, Dan, what do you think? Does this make his prediction make you more optimistic for anything happening this year?
It's better than nothing, but a lot of people were predicting Harry Reid to pass something earlier this year, attaching something. I just think there are too many other main issues that the U.S. government's dealing with right now, and I don't see online poker being even making a blip on the radar. We cover this industry. We're around this industry all the time, but in the broad American landscape, this doesn't, this hasn't been, talked about. At least after, there was a little blip after April 15th, after those online poker indictments, and then it kind of went back to reality for everyone else. They started talking about the economy and, Libya and Afghanistan. There are a lot of things going on in the world right now that, don't pertain to online poker.
It's also easy to be optimistic when no opposition's mobilized. And once a bill comes out and actually looks like it has a chance of going someplace, that's when the heat really gets turned up. It's the same as when you see gambling expansion bills all over the U.S. I mean, when everyone's talking about gambling coming to a state, it's all hunky-dory. But once it's actually there and about to happen, you see fierce opposition to it. And it's whether you can overcome that fierce opposition to it that actually determines whether anything or not will happen.
Yeah, and I think you'll definitely see some fierce opposition from some folks, and you know, you might see some fierce opposition from some states that are looking at wanting to control this and not have the federal government in the way. I think California, for instance, is going to want to have.
I'll tell you, the opposition is starting to build from a place where people don't normally talk about it, which is lotteries.
Mm.
And lottery commissioners and lottery directors all over the country are looking at this.
Massachusetts in particular.
Massachusetts in particular. But they're looking at this and saying, how is this going to impact lotto sales? How is this going to impact keno sales? And do we really want this if it's going to drive lottery revenue down? And they're not really worried about the overall revenue picture. They're worried about protecting their piece of the pie. And if you can't get the lotto people on board, that's just another stakeholder that you need to worry about and that puts up more opposition. This is a tricky piece of legislation. This isn't a simple piece of legislation to put forward and pass through. And the other aspect of this is there has to be a revenue aspect of this, which means there has to be something that goes through another House committee, and it's not just the Commerce Committee. And that's where things really get tricky.
Well, Loveman says it's going to create 10,000 jobs and raise billions in revenue at a time when we're talking about raising the debt ceiling or not raising the debt ceiling and all these types of things. I think there's a lot of solid arguments to be made. It's just a matter of whether people will listen to them or agree with them. So it should be interesting. We'll certainly keep following this issue, and as always, you can read more about it on CasinoCityTimes.com. We will be tracking developments, and if anything happens, you'll be the first to know. So our last topic of the day, before we get to our best bets, is, surprise, surprise, once again, Atlantic City. A few days ago, the Associated Press ran a very interesting story by Wayne Perry about the struggle Atlantic City is having over its image. Now, for years, the city has tried to market itself as a family-friendly destination. Now it appears that a lot of the people in Atlantic City, a lot of these casino executives, have figured out that, surprise, surprise, sex sells. Vin, can you shed a little more light on the story?
The fact that sex sells, or the fact that Atlantic City wants to
wants to take advantage of that fact.
This is a tricky. I mean, Atlantic City's always been divided into two camps, and so on one side you have sort of the residents of the Jersey Shore and the politicians who want Atlantic City to be a family-friendly destination. And that's really what they want out of it. That's always been their thing. They're like, look, if Atlantic City can become a family-friendly destination, it will thrive, it will boom. And then you have the casino owners who are looking at it and saying, we don't care if Atlantic City is a family-friendly destination. We want to make some cash. And they're looking at Las Vegas right now and saying, yeah, we can do that. And the yeah, we can do that part is putting out party pits that have very attractive women in bustiers dealing blackjack. It's been highly successful in Las Vegas. Bally's has one that they're sharing, I believe, with the Clarion Hotel. It's been highly successful. That place is packed the entire time. The Tropicana is introducing one, and so they've got that going on. When the Borgata was built, they had the Borgata Babes, which triggered a bunch of lawsuits from waitresses who didn't want to wear those outfits and over the fact that there were physical requirements to work in the Borgata because you had to be able to fit into those costumes, which were revealing. And the Borgata actually published a calendar of Borgata Babes for a few years. That was a big seller. And so you have this tug and pull in Atlantic City between the casino industry and the politicians. And the casino industry wants to go sexier, and the politicians and a lot of the people in the Jersey Shore want it to be more family-friendly. And right now, the casino companies are starting to win that tug of war. And they haven't always won that tug of war, but they're starting to win it right now. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens. So I think you're going to start to see, and even if you look at what they're calling the new sexy outfit at the Tropicana, it's tame in comparison to what you see in Vegas. It's significantly sexier than what was out there before, but it's not that much. But you're going to see it at the Trop. You're going to see it at a couple other
casinos, especially a resorts casino. They're taking over. They're taking the Boardwalk Empire theme and going with the low-cut flapper dresses. You see it a little bit at the Trump Plaza and in the Borgata. You see it a lot. And so I think it makes sense. If you're going to become a resort destination on the Eastern Seaboard right now, you need something to distinguish itself. Because right now you've got casinos everywhere. And being the family-friendly resort destination, I don't think it's going to cut it in this marketplace, because families can go anywhere on the Jersey Shore to get the Ferris wheel and the funnel cake and walking on the boardwalk and hitting the beach and all that sort of stuff. You got casinos up and down the East Coast, so what are you going to do to distinguish yourself? You got to get the young, hip crowd in there that wants to party, wants to give up some of their hard-earned money and is willing to spend it. And the way you do that is by getting a little sexier. And I don't think the politicians are going to like it. I don't think a lot of the residents are going to like it. But to me, it makes a lot of business sense. And we'll see how much free rein the casino industry is given to do this in Atlantic City. It's going to be an interesting development.
Now, Dan, you're kind of right in the wheelhouse of the audience that they're looking for in your mid-20s. You know, are you more likely to visit Atlantic City if the women serving the drinks and dealing at the tables are a little more friendly in the eye candy department?
It's still, from where I am right now, where I live, it's still a hike. You know, it's still a 7-hour drive. So if I was gung-ho on going to Atlantic City, I think I'd be going anyways. It certainly would help, you know.
Maybe would you be choosing a casino one over the other based on the available talent?
If I know the dealer is going to be a smoking bombshell in their 20s rather than a 50-year-old mother of five, yeah, I think I'd go to the casino with the smoking bombshell than the latter. I Atlantic City's got to do something. We've been talking about, we're beating a dead horse. The horse has been dead for a couple of years now, it seems, on this podcast. But, anything they can do to attract new business, I think, is a good thing. And the fact that they were trying to market Atlantic City as a family-friendly resort, I think, is a misfire. You know, I've been to Atlantic City. I'm not a father, but I wouldn't imagine taking my kids to Atlantic City for a vacation. Especially, there's so many other options in this great country of ours to go on vacation. Atlantic City would have to, if it's not at the very bottom, you know, it's pushing real close. I don't think you're going to take your twins and your son to Atlantic City anytime soon, Aaron, right?
No, I'm not. And, you know, it's funny. Here's my perception of Atlantic City versus Las Vegas. Atlantic City, to me, is, a destination for, you're more senior gambler, I guess. You know, that's how I view it. Someone that's in their 50s, 60s, 70s, retired. Married couples who enjoy gambling, going together, and taking advantage of whatever's on offer, and that's fine and good. And my impression of Vegas is a crazy bachelorette party and a bunch of 20-year-olds going around together and raising hell. And it's not the only population in either place, but that's how I envision it. And then beyond that, outside of the casinos, from what I have seen, Atlantic City has a little bit more of a sketchier sort of element to me outside of the casinos. And, maybe that's because we were walking home at 4 a.m. Last time I was there. That probably had more to do with it than anything. I'm not going to take my family for a walk on the boardwalk in Atlantic City at, 3 p.m. on a Saturday. It's not, there are better places to go. Like you said, I'd choose something else for my family vacation. But I think they're going in the right direction here. And I think, trying to sell themselves as kind of like a mini East Coast Vegas in some similar ways is going to attract a certain element of a population which may be more likely to gamble.
Yeah, I'll say this about Atlantic City is that There are multiple ways to look at Atlantic City, and one of the problems Atlantic City's had is it has cultivated for years this gambling of convenience market, convenience gambling market, which is bus tours, buses, going to the senior citizen centers, picking up the buses, dropping them off at Atlantic City, returning them back at the end of the day. you know, convincing people who are a couple hours away to drive in for the day and drive back and all this sort of stuff. And they spent a decade making a ton of money doing this. And the reason they were able to do this is and they didn't build themselves up as a destination resort. And the reason they were able to do this and succeed and make money doing this is because they were the only game in town. If you go back to the late 70s and right through the mid 90s, there was no place else to gamble on the East Coast until the emergence of Foxwoods and Mohegan Sun. That was it in terms of casinos, was Atlantic City. But the competitive landscape has changed tremendously. And so now they can't be a convenience gambling locale. That can't be their main business. Because right now there are places, even if you're living within New Jersey, if you're within an hour of Philadelphia, you've got a more convenient place to gamble than Atlantic City. It's just easier. I mean, if you're on the New Jersey Pennsylvania border, you're heading to Philly. And if you're in the right places in New Jersey, if you're up by New York City, you might be heading up to Foxwoods or Mohegan Sun instead of going to Atlantic City. The competition's too heavy. And so then, all right, what do you have to do? You've got certain challenges that you're facing. Atlantic City, because it built itself up as a convenience gambling thing based on buses of senior citizens coming in rather than as a resort destination, they never really built up the air service there. So they don't have that huge tourist infrastructure like Las Vegas. Las Vegas got a major airport, got lots of air service, so you don't have that issue. So what do you have to do? You have to sort of draw that four-hour drive circle around Atlantic City. And you have to convince people who are within a four-hour drive to come down and spend the weekend there. And how do you convince them to come down and spend the weekend there? All right, you got to put on good shows. Check. Atlantic City started doing that. All right, what else do you have to do? Well, you got to get a younger gambling market, because right now your buses of senior citizens who are coming in to gamble, they're not going to be around forever. That demographic is aging and it's slowly going away, and you have to replace it with something. Who do you replace it with? You replace it with younger gamblers with more disposable income. All right, what do younger gamblers with more disposable income want? Las Vegas has figured it out. They're catering to them right now. They want the cool clubs. They want the cool nightclubs. They want to be able to get bottle service at these clubs. They want the sexy dealers. They want all of that sort of stuff that comes with it. So the casino industry has to evolve with it. That's what the casino industry in Atlantic City is doing right now. They're doing the things that they have to do. Granted, they've gotten to these things too late, and they're facing institutional problems just in terms of the way Atlantic City's managed and with the politicians, all that sort of stuff. But they're playing catch-up right now, and they need to get there in a hurry. And these are the types of changes that need to happen, and they got to put the pedal to the metal and get this stuff done. Otherwise, as a gambling market, it's going to disappear.
Well, I don't think anyone wants to see that. I think Atlantic City has been one of the, you know, traditionally one of the best places in the U.S. to go in terms of casino gambling. It's all consolidated. It's all close together. It's a nice, it's a great scene. And you know, we certainly have said it before, but we want to see it rebound. And hopefully, as the economy ticks back up, so will Atlantic City. And you know, maybe these plans are going to help. So anyway, we'll continue to keep track of that, and hopefully maybe we'll make some field trips to Atlantic City, and we can report on just how improved the situation there is in the coming months and years. Well, before we move on to our best bets, I want to remind you that you can download the Casino City Gang each and every week from iTunes to listen to on your iPod or MP3 player. You can also download the gang from the Casino City family of websites, including online.casinocity.com and casinocitytimes.com. And you can listen to our live stream at 11 a.m. Eastern Time and archives of the program at blogtalkradio.com/SpartyOn, SpartyOn. Well, gentlemen, it's time for our weekly best bets. Vin, I know you had Vancouver in five in the Stanley Cup.
I was incorrect. Vancouver, I told you guys this yesterday, if Tony Kornheiser was a sports columnist in the Vancouver area, he would have trotted out one of his favorite phrases and said, Vancouver played like a bunch of choking dogs. It was an embarrassing performance by the Canucks, and they should be embarrassed and disappointed in themselves as a team. And congratulations to the Boston Bruins. They brought home the cup. And congratulations to Tim Thomas. That's one of the best performances by a goaltender I've seen since probably Dominik Hasek in the Buffalo Sabres. Made a Stanley Cup run. I don't think they won, but they made a run earlier. and he was outstanding. He was very Hasek-like in this.
Well, I have to say to all of our European listeners who have no idea what we're talking about with this hockey talk, now you know how I feel when Vin and Dan start talking about soccer.
See, I disagree. I'd say the European people are very vested in the NHL. There's a high percentage of European players in the National
True.
Hockey
and,
League.
And I'm talking to English,
the UK is
an English broadcast. I don't know about that. You know, and if they're listening to us in Sweden or in, you know, the Czech Republic, then thank you. But if you're living in Ireland or the UK, you're just as lost as Aaron trying to talk about the World Cup last year.
I have to say my flag, national anthem, and what was my other part of it, my analysis? I can't remember. I analyzed all the matchups based on the team nicknames. National flag and national anthem were basically how I chose my winners, and I can't remember how I did. I've got a feeling it wasn't very good. Anyway, it's time for our weekly best bets. Vin, how did you do last week?
I won 3-0. It was on hockey. It was on one of those 1-0 hockey games that was out in Vancouver, and I hit the race to 3. I said no one would reach 3. No one reached 3. I took the highest scoring period as the third period. It was indeed the highest scoring period, and I had the Canucks on the money line.
So, well, that's pretty good. What have you got for us this week?
Golf, because I can't bet on hockey. There's no football to bet on, and there's no college sports to bet on, and I refuse to bet on tennis this week.
Tennis. I forgot about tennis. I was a big tennis bettor.
I will be placing Wimbledon best bets, so you can all look forward to that. I am a big tennis fan, and just as a sort of a side note, tennis is an interesting gambling sport in that there is a lot to gamble on. You can gamble on individual sets. You can gamble on matches. You can gamble on who's going to win a tournament. You can gamble who's going to reach the quarterfinals. You can gamble on all sorts of things. The other interesting aspect about tennis is one of those things where one minor thing can change something dramatically. I mean, you could be watching a match, and you could see a guy just tweak a hammy, and you'd be like, oh, that's no bueno. And you have that guy pick to win, and you see a guy tweak the hammy. That's when you get on to a site like Bet365, where you said, all right, live betting, time to hedge my bet. And you start picking the other guy to win sets instead of winning the match, and hopefully you save yourself some money. And so it's interesting. Tennis is an interesting sport to bet on, and it is a widely bet on sport in Europe. And
often the target of match fixing.
Allegations. It is often the target of match fixing allegations for a couple of reasons. One, because it's just so easy to do. That's the first thing. But the other, and this is a truly much bigger problem, is that access to players is ridiculously easy, and not just access to players, but access to information that shouldn't be public is ridiculously easy. And so I could, if I just looked the part and, you know, falsified a badge or did whatever, because security at these things are lousy, you could walk right underneath the stadiums into the training area of the players and just keep an eye out on things, or you could approach the players and talk to them, and they'll just talk to you like you belong if you look like you belong. And it's just a really weird setup where a lot of shady characters have way too much access to restricted parts of the stadium. And when you have that, you have a lot of people looking for information down there, looking for that added edge to place bets on stuff. And you get a lot of suspicious betting patterns as a result. And because you've got all this access to the athletes, if you're down in the restricted areas, you have ways to get to them and try and convince them to shave a point here, shave a point there, throw a set here. It's too easy. And so it's something that tennis as an institution, as a sport, has to deal with. They've started to deal with it. They've gotten a lot better over the last 5 years, but they still have a long ways to go. On the golf, I've got a few best bets that I like here. We'll start off with, and these are all matchup bets, Retief Goosen versus Sergio Garcia. You're getting 10 to 11 on both, picking either side. Sergio Garcia's really gone downhill over the last year and a half, and so I'm going to go with Retief Goosen here. I like Retief, and he's Retief traditionally does well in these really tough sorts of majors where par or better is going to win. Retief tends to fare fairly well. And so I'll go with Retief Goosen on this one. Next one is Hunter Mahan versus Steve Stricker. To me, this is interesting. Hunter Mahan is a supremely talented player, and I think the course sets up well for him. But this is a congressional at the U.S. Open. This is one of those courses where par or better is going to win, and that tends to favor Steve Stricker. You're getting both at 10 to 11. I'm going to go with Hunter Mahan. I think the talent wins out on this one. I think he's going to find a way, and I think he's going to be in contention the entire weekend. And I like Hunter Mahan in this. So I'll take Retief Goosen and Hunter Mahan in my first two matchup bets. And in the last matchup bet, it's Mateo Manassero versus Aaron Baddeley. I like Aaron Baddeley a lot. I think he's a heck of a player, so I'll take him at 10 to 11 as well. So I've got Goosen, Mahan, and Aaron Baddeley all at 10 to 11 in my matchup bets.
Now, Dan, I know you're headed down this weekend to catch some of the action at the U.S. Open, and I'm sure that's going to play into your best bets. Before we get to that, how did you do last week?
A little bit of a struggle. I went 1-2. I won a Red Sox-Yankees bet, but I lost my golf matchup bet with Lee Westwood. I forget who Lee Westwood over David Toms. Toms played he played terrible. I don't think he made the cut. Westwood had top 10, so I really missed on that one. And then I took the Heat over the Mavs. I believe you took the Mavs over the Heat, so I did the opposite of you. And
how'd that work out for you?
It worked out well. Well, it worked out well for me as a fan, because I hate the Heat. But I'm going to do three matchup bets for the U.S. Open. I should be able to hopefully see most of these guys in person when I head down tomorrow afternoon. Like Vin, I'm going to go with Retief Goosen over Sergio Garcia. I'm not as down on Sergio as Vin is. He's had some good tournaments this year. It looks like, he's hit rock bottom. He's on his way back. But, Goosen's won two U.S. Opens before. Like Vin said, he does well in these difficult tracks, these difficult courses. So we go with Goosen over Garcia. My next bet is Mickelson versus Rory McIlroy.
See, I stayed away from this one. I was wondering if you're going
to
take it.
Well, you're getting bad odds with Mickelson. You're getting him at 5-6, but I think he has a shot of winning this whole thing. I'm hoping he breaks through. I'm a huge Phil Mickelson fan. It'd be great to be, in person. I was there in 2009 in person at Bethpage when Mickelson was in contention at the end. He missed a couple putts that he should have hit, and that was tough for me to watch as a fan. But I'm going to take Mickelson over McIlroy 5-6.
Now McIlroy, I just want to talk about this a little bit because I did think about looking at this bet too, and I stayed away from it. Dan, McIlroy is a fantastic golfing talent. Do you just feel like his course doesn't set up well for him?
McIlroy could, he could win. I think it's you talk about how courses set up for certain players and so on and so forth, and usually that's thrown to the wind. If you can get hot for a couple of days. If you can hit some putts, if you can get some lucky bounces, those are the guys who tend to win. I don't think anyone had Charles Schwartzel winning the Masters, in April. I think McIlroy.
Well, nobody could spell his name, let alone have one win.
I think McIlroy's definitely got the talent to win. I'd be surprised if he won, but I'd be surprised if most of these guys won. To be honest, I wouldn't be surprised if Phil won. The only surprise would be him finally breaking through at a major, at a U.S. Open. So that's why I'm going with Phil. I'm kind of going with my heart here, but I'm going with Phil at 5-6. And my last bet is a bet that, I was a little surprised when I saw the odds. Ricky Fowler versus Lucas Glover. Fowler's an 8-13 favorite, despite the fact that this is the first time he's played a U.S. Open as a pro. It's the first. He's never won a tournament. He's still looking for that breakthrough first win. Glover won the U.S. Open. I attended at Bethpage in 2009. He won at Quail Hollow earlier this year. Had a pretty good showing at the Players Championship. He kind of faded at the end, but he was in contention right at the end. You can get him at 13-10. I think this is a very good value bet. Glover's one of the few guys I put actual money on in my parimutuel pool that I do. So I'm going to go with Glover at 13-10 here.
All right. Well, I'm sure you'll be a lot of fun watching these guys in person. I know I'll be trying to watch some of it on TV myself this weekend.
I've got one more question, Dan, because you're going to watch this in person. Will you be, betting on the course or do you keep the action off the course?
I'm going to keep the action off the course. I actually just found out my uncle who lives in the area, who's going to be attending on Saturday, got special trophy club pavilion type tickets. So that means free booze for me on Saturday. So that's what I think I wouldn't be in a good state to be placing actual money on the course. I just gotta hope I don't get kicked out. So I'll leave all the action away from the course.
Because I tried to get action while the game was going on last night outside of the two prop bets, and I couldn't get anyone to take a bet.
Well, we'll let Dan tell the stories of his experience next week. It should be a lot of fun. I think we may have just lost the live stream, so if you were listening to us, I hope you've downloaded us so you can catch me dropping some wisdom on my best bets. Last week I went 1-1-1. I won my NBA bet, as Dan mentioned, as the Mavs won the NBA title. Lost my baseball double result bet. I needed the Sox-Yankees game last Thursday to be tied after five innings, and the Red Sox led the game 2-0. And I pushed on my golf bet. Jonathan Bird and Brant Snedeker both shot first-round 71s in my 18-hole matchup bet. As for this week, if you were in Boston, you probably didn't know it with the Bruins winning the Stanley Cup last night, but Red Sox pitcher Josh Beckett threw a complete game one-hitter last night. Clay Buchholz will take the mound today against the Rays. He's got a rested bullpen behind him. I really like the Red Sox here at plus 107, even against a very tough pitcher in David Price. But I think the Red Sox have been on a roll as of late, and I think that they're going to continue. Like I said, with Buchholz on the mound, he's a solid pitcher. Excuse me, and a very well-rested bullpen. I think the Sox have an edge here, and so I definitely like the odds there. My second bet is an 18-hole golf matchup bet at the U.S. Open. David Toms is pitted against Ian Poulter. Toms has had a great month of May. He won the Crowne Plaza Invitational and finished second at the Players Championship. Poulter, meanwhile, he hasn't done that well when playing in the U.S. this year. He finished 57th at the Players Championship. Even though the odds aren't what I'd like them to be at 5-6, I'm going to take Toms in round one today. I think he's done well in some U.S. Opens in the past, and I expect him to do well today. And finally, I'm going to go back for my D-Gen bet of the week. I'm 0-2 on these, but I'm going to go back to the double result. And once again, I'm going to bet both sides of the tie in the Sox-Rays game. So I'm going to bet a tie after five innings and the Red Sox winning, and then a tie after five innings and the Devil Rays winning. Both of those results offer 9-1 odds. So while I do think the Red Sox will win this game, I think with two tough pitchers, I think it's going to be close for a while. So I like the prospect of being paid at four. You know, you average the two, and it's 4.5-1 if it's tied after five innings. So I'm gonna see if that's finally going to work one time.
Well, just to circle back around, I'm just curious, because you mentioned Josh Beckett, and Dan, I'd like your take on this too. We're setting odds in Josh Beckett versus Justin Verlander for the Cy Young right now. How would you guys set that matchup up?
I don't have, you know, I know Verlander's had some really strong outings. He had the no-hitter. He almost had another one. Watching Beckett each week, you know, he's had some huge wins against, you know, he's had some big wins against the Yankees. He shut down the Rays, who, you know, they might not have the best lineup in the world, but they still, you know, one of the better teams in the league. I'd probably give it to Beckett right now. You know, it's so trick or treat with that guy. You never know, you know, before the year starts, what Beckett you're going to get. This guy had an ERA over 5 last year. And who would have, you know, people were talking about how this was one of the worst contracts in the league after they re-signed him at the beginning of the year. So, you know, I follow the Red Sox. I'm a big Red Sox fan. So the homer in me would probably give it to Beckett.
So you probably put him at 8-13 and Verlander at 13-10?
Probably a little closer than that. But Beckett is the guy. I think it's his to lose right now.
What about you, Aaron?
I haven't watched nearly enough baseball to have a clue. I'm just looking at the stats right now. you know, Beckett's got a little bit better ERA. It's hard for me to tell without looking really closely at the stats here. Verlander's got a ton of strikeouts, 105 strikeouts in 111 innings. So he's averaging almost a strikeout per inning. He's only got 26 walks. Beckett's got a few more walks and fewer innings, a little fewer on the strikeouts. But like I said, his ERA is a little lower. You know, I have really not watched all that much baseball this year, so it's hard for me. It's hard for me to
I got it. I would put both.
They're both good. I'll put it that way.
I would put both at 10-11 right now. I think that would be fair odds, having both at 10-11. I think.
And the bet's a push if neither of them win.
Yes. Yeah, bet's a push if neither of them win. But I put both of them at 10-11. I think that they're the odds-on favorite to win the Cy Young this year in the AL, and it's going to be an interesting race as summer heats up.
Absolutely. Well, we hope that you'll be following Major League Baseball as much as we do. And we hope that you'll continue following the gaming industry as much as we do as well. And you can always do that at CasinoCityTimes.com and listen here on the podcast. That's going to do it for this week's edition of the Casino City Gang. Thanks again for joining us, and we hope you'll be back with us again next week. The music for the Casino City Gang is provided by the PodSafe Music Network. The show is for entertainment purposes only and does not endorse illegal activity. Please be sure gambling is legal in your jurisdiction before placing any wagers.